Aloha, everyone. Welcome to the Q&A session for the fourth panel this evening. The format is that we ask persons who are here to give questions to pose their question in a clear way. If you could speak a little bit slowly so that we could accommodate the translation into Spanish. And we are seeking questions to the panelists rather than personal statements. But we'll welcome your questions for any member of the panel, or if you wish, for all to respond at this time.
Teresa Turner, International Oil Working Group. I'd like to ask Luis Macas to give us an update on the struggles around the petroleum in Ecuador, in particular the pipeline, the second pipeline, and the law case against Texaco, and any update, for example, the solidarity that you're giving to the people of Peru in their anti-oil struggle, and Bolivia.
Bueno, muchas gracias por la pregunta. El problema del petróleo es un problema actual. Las condiciones no han cambiado. Los contratos siguen igual como siempre. Como ustedes conocen, los beneficios es del 15 a 85. Es decir, el 15% para el Estado y el 85% para las compañías. Y el contrato más generoso es 20-80. Es decir, 20% para el Estado y el 80% para la compañía. Esa es la relación que existe y no ha variado hasta el día de hoy. Entonces, especialmente con las nuevas compañías, con las nuevas concesiones, porque la modalidad es la concesión, los pueblos indígenas, especialmente en el bloque 23, el bloque 24, desde hace mucho tiempo ya, especialmente la comunidad de Sarayacu, en la provincia del Pastaza, ha venido haciendo su lucha en contra de esta compañía. De tal modo de que no va a ser fácil el que la lucha nuestra haga que los contratos se realicen con el Estado. Por otro lado, quisiéramos decir la lucha del juicio contra la Chevron Texaco. Bueno, es de conocimiento de ustedes que se estaba ventilando aquí en los tribunales de los Estados Unidos, pero luego fue trasladado al Ecuador. Y en el Ecuador, el juez competente es el juez de la región donde se asentó la compañía Texaco, es decir, en la provincia de Sucumbíos. Y entonces, el juez de este caso es la Corte Superior en Sucumbíos. Y en este juzgado, perdón, y en este tribunal es donde se está ventilando el caso. Pero se ha demorado hasta el día de hoy. La Texaco ha puesto cualquiera de los pretextos para no comparecer, para no acudir y no colaborar para que este juicio se adelante. Siempre está tratando de ser estancado. De tal manera de que nosotros sí quisiéramos también el trabajo que se ha hecho en el pasado, el trabajo de solidaridad, especialmente de los pueblos amigos de Norteamérica, los pueblos indígenas, las organizaciones no gubernamentales, los que siempre se han solidarizado con la lucha de los pueblos indígenas y con la lucha de los campesinos de la Amazonía, que están precisamente pues luchando para que este juicio no sea sobornado, para que este juicio no sea estancado como trata de hacer la compañía.
So, oil is a burning issue, pun intended. But the conditions of the oil industry in Ecuador really haven't changed. The concessions are still being granted, and the benefits are given. 80% of the benefits are for the companies, and only 15% is for the Ecuadorian states. If you're lucky, you get a contract for 20% for the Ecuadorian state and 80% for the companies. But the bottom line is that nothing's changed. The relationships haven't changed. There's some new companies, new concessions are being granted, but things are still business as usual. For the indigenous peoples in what's called Block 23 and Block 24, which are areas of concessions in the southern part of the Ecuadorian Amazon, the indigenous peoples continue to resist. You have the case of the Sarayaku community, which is in Pastaza, that is still struggling and still resisting. But it's not an easy struggle, and the state's still handing out concessions, and it just is more of the same. Now, as far as the lawsuit against Chevron Texaco goes, many of you know that originally it was in the U.S. courts, but it got thrown out of U.S. courts, and now it's in Ecuador, and the judge that is hearing the case is from Sucumbíos, which is the province where Texaco did the most damage. So it's in the Superior Court of Sucumbíos, but nothing is going on. Texaco is using every excuse in the book not to go to court, not to collaborate, and so they're trying to block the lawsuit. And once again, we appeal to you for your solidarity. We'd love to receive the support and solidarity of all peoples of the world, but especially the indigenous peoples and organizations from the north and NGOs who have always supported us and always shared their solidarity with the indigenous peoples and small-scale farmers of the Ecuadorian Amazon. So that's basically the update. Thanks.
I just wanted to ask, one of the effects of globalization has been kind of like pressure on indigenous people to migrate to the United States to come make money that they couldn't make back where we were originally from, because it's really hard to maintain your livelihood when corn is undercut, you know, like the prices of corn are undercutting what you can grow for yourself. But so I see a lot of people in my generation and like my younger cousins and stuff, even though we are of indigenous ancestry, growing up out here very removed from our traditions. And so I wanted to know you guys' response to that, and what are some specific ways that we can counteract that loss of culture based on the displacement that our communities experience?
Thank you for that question, and I am very happy that to take the topic of migration. And as you can see, many indigenous peoples around the world are migrating, and also it's not now in the globalization world that it's not only indigenous peoples who are migrating to urban areas. They are coming also to the US, to Europe, and other countries. In my country, for example, Ecuador, many young people are migrating to another countries, especially the United States, but another people from Peru or Colombia, they are going to my country, that it's interesting. And sometimes we say in Ecuador, we are like a colony of the US, because now we have dollars as our currency. Now in our countries, we have the Manta base and also the Plan Colombia. So it's totally, we are a colonized country now. And that's why the indigenous peoples and the movement is trying to resist of that and trying to tell to the non-indigenous and the whole society that it's possible that we, with our kind of lives, can preserve who we are, the Ecuadorians or indigenous peoples around the world. At the United Nations, this topic, it's coming and it's growing, it's arising in a very good way. And last year, for the first time, the United Nations and the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues Secretariat and the International Organization for Migration, they have an expert meeting, and they are focusing and they have clear recommendations that was discussed during this last 2 months ago in a high-level meeting on migration. And now the topic of indigenous peoples and migration, it's there. So now it's the opportunity for us to promote what is recommended, to promote what is said by indigenous experts on these issues, especially for the young generation. It is true that we are losing our connection, we are losing our language, we are using our customs in this country, but it's also the identity that you have, the parents, the grandparents, they have this good and big connection, a strong connection that they have to share with us, with the new generation. In this globalized world, it's almost impossible, but also we have to take in mind that we can use the internet, we can use communication systems, radio, where we can share and where we can speak our language, where we can learn about us. Nothing, it's impossible, it's possible. So I welcome, if you are interested, I can give you our address and you will find out these recommendations, which is that's just the starting point of this growing situation. Thank you.
You mentioned that it just took $2,000 to become a shareholder and be able to go to corporation board meetings. Is there any fund for indigenous people who don't have money to have a large numbers to be given that money to become a large block of shareholders to have some voice in how corporations can be more socially responsible to indigenous issues?
I think the Texaco issue is a good issue to use as an example, because for many years we filed shareholder resolutions with Texaco on the issue of Ecuador, and as the interest from some of the denominations started to dwindle, you know, so did the resolutions, and so that's why I think it's important to fight the battle not only in the courts, but in any as many different ways as you possibly can, and one of is to take the issue to the shareholders.
And is there a monetary fund to pay indigenous people so that they can be at those board meetings if they don't have the money?
Well, you know, there's a lot of indigenous organizations and institutions that already have investments. Uh-huh. They're just not using the money that they have for that leverage. I mean, the religious community has $110 billion worth of investments. That money is there in pension funds, and it's earning money for the pension fund people. But, you know, you don't do anything to money. It just sits there. But you have this right. It's like voting. You have a right to vote a proxy, to file a shareholder resolution. They use that money as a leverage to produce proxies, to file resolutions. And some of these organizations within the indigenous community could do the same thing, especially the casinos could be taking this money and using it in a way. They have investments all over the place. All they need to do is to set up a socially responsible investment fund and use that money to file resolutions or even to use it to get meetings with these companies.
I was touched by the fact that you said that with a world trade was going to be sent from the United States to Ecuador, corn, soya, and chicken, which was the most polluted food that contains only genetic engineer food. And that, I feel, is the poison that is coming to the region of Central America and South America, and it's just being signed by the President Toledo in Peru, which really hurts the people in Peru, and they are not aware of this. They are not aware that they are coming to pollute the land. They are coming to kill the people. And for me, it's like another world to the indigenous people. And I would like you to address about that.
Bueno, yo creo que además del envenenamiento, porque son productos genéticamente alterados, tanto el maíz, el arroz, la soya, pero también las consecuencias son igual de graves. Los productores agrícolas, especialmente el maíz, ellos con su producción anual abastecen el mercado. Producimos alrededor de 600,000 toneladas de maíz anual, y eso es para el consumo nacional y también se vende. Y entonces, lo que quería hacer Estados Unidos es colocar 700,000 toneladas. Entonces nos preguntamos, pero ¿eso significa la quiebra, la desaparición definitiva del productor del maíz ecuatoriano? En México tenemos una experiencia ya, nosotros compartimos con los hermanos de México, 3,000,000 de agricultores, de productores de maíz están hoy en la desocupación. 15,000,000 de hectáreas se han dejado de sembrar porque Estados Unidos ubica en el mercado mexicano el maíz. Ahora las tortillas mexicanas se comen con el maíz genéticamente alterado. De tal modo de que eso iba a suceder en el Ecuador. Igual en el caso de otros productos. Pero sobre todo nosotros quisiéramos decir a ustedes de que no solamente es la ubicación de los productos subsidiados de la agricultura norteamericana, porque la agricultura norteamericana no es una agricultura del mediano y pequeño productor, son de las grandes empresas transnacionales, como ustedes conocen. Entonces, la leche, por ejemplo, para nosotros significaba la desaparición de los ganaderos en el Ecuador. Entonces, esas son las consecuencias y creo que eso se hace a propósito. Pero lo más terrible es que es para legalizar el control de los recursos naturales, el control del agua, de los territorios indígenas, de donde nace y es la fuente del agua, por ejemplo. Este momento tenemos que algunas empresas están en los territorios indígenas y tratando, por ejemplo, de decir que ellos son los que pueden manejar los recursos y no los pueblos indígenas. De tal modo de que es directamente el control de los recursos naturales. Y obviamente también tiene que ver con el control político que siempre ha ejercido desde el norte hacia el sur.
So, GMOs aren't just poison, they're genetically modified poison, and that's the case especially of corn and soy. And the consequences of the importation of these GMO products are very, very grave, especially for the corn farmers of Ecuador. The annual production that supplies the national market in Ecuador is 600,000 tons of corn a year. However, what the U.S. was proposing to do with the free trade agreement was to flood the Ecuadorian market with 700,000 tons of GMO corn. This would have resulted in the bankrupting of the small farmers of the entire nation. We see that in Mexico, there are now 3 million unemployed small farmers that used to grow corn, and that there are 15 million hectares that of land that used to grow corn that is now lying fallow. Why? Because the U.S. flooded the Mexican market with U.S. genetically modified corns. Right now, the Mexican tortilla is made out of U.S. GMO corn. And the same would happen in Ecuador if we let this free trade agreement happen. And that's not just true for corn. It's true for all the other agricultural products. What they do is they flood the market with U.S. subsidized products. And it's not even grown in the U.S. by small or medium-scale farmers. It's produced by agribusiness. We saw, for example, in the case of the dairy farmers in Ecuador, that the entire dairy farmer in Ecuador would be destroyed by the free trade agreement. They would all be bankrupted. So we think that they do this on purpose. It's not just a coincidence. And it's really, really terrible. What they're trying to do is legalize the U.S.'s control of our natural resources. And we see this in the case of water. We see this in the case of indigenous territories, where a lot of the watersheds are located, where the rivers are born. The sources of the water are often located in indigenous peoples' territories. And the multinational companies want to get their hands on indigenous peoples' territories so that they can control our resources. So that's really what is at stake, the control of the natural resources, which, of course, goes hand in hand with political control.
Just one thing, to put a face behind it, one of those corporations is Monsanto. As you go through these multi-corporations, you should know the face behind that, too. So Monsanto is one of the big GMO companies.
You know, if you want to get some excellent information on this and also some technical help, contact the Center for Food Safety. They were the ones that helped us in Hawaii to identify the patents that had been taken out on our traditional food, and they also told us who it was that took the patent out. They have excellent publications, and last year they came out with a book called Monsanto versus U.S. Farmers that lists dozens, hundreds of cases going on in the U.S. right now. Monsanto shutting down farmers in every state. So, Center for Food Safety is a good resource.
I am very glad to hear a message of inspiration and hope. And I would like to know, what message would you give to the younger activists that may follow in your paths?
At least from my experience, and I lived in many different countries, and I went to many colleges, at least from my personal experience, I lived in many countries, and I went to many colleges in Europe, in Cuba, in Lebanon, Palestine, etc. Education, education, education. And don't stay home. Don't stay home.
Well, we are the future generation. We are the generation that can't follow what our wonderful leaders were doing since many years ago. There are two different scenarios that I can't find out now, and I am very happy to be in this international arena working on these issues. And I was telling my other colleague Luis Macas that there are too many in my country working on the local issues, and they are doing very well, but also we need international people, indigenous peoples who are in this diplomatic way. We need you, we need your help, we need the solidarity of the youth. Not only the indigenous one, also the non-indigenous, because as Ali said, also we need the people who knows who knows the what is going on in the university, what is everybody telling us to do in this new world. What I ask you to all of you is to keep helping and keep also to the older leaders to teach us what is their strategy, because if they someday disappear, who is going to follow up on that? We, the young generation, we are the future and we are the present. I just wanted to tell that. Thank you.
I think for young activists, it's important to strike a balance between resisting against and working towards. So to always balance the negation approach of fighting and against the destructive patterns in the world, economic globalization, neocolonialism, and yet affirming and working towards the traditional practices, healthy ways of living. And to always balance also your personal, your own health, your community health, and your environmental health. I know it's a lot, but I think balance is really the key, so that if you're always fighting against or resisting, we become an opponent. And I'll summarize a Taoist teaching that's been very important to me is, how do we oppose opposition without becoming an opponent? It's kind of a koan. So I think it's very important to be affirmative and yet also fight against the destruction in the world and to strike that balance.
I guess my answer would be, one of the things that I can see is to be able to correlate what is happening to the indigenous people to what is happening to people in general. To look at what the human right really is as young people, and to understand that your human rights have really been taken from you because you've been dispossessed of everything. And that the only right you have is to work for the corporation. The only right you have is to make somebody else's profit motive better in this country. And that when you look at democracy, that you understand that this isn't a democracy that you live in. And to understand how to differentiate that and the need to be able to look at yourself and the motivation that you might have as a young person to transform your thinking and those around you toward a better ethic on the land, toward a better ethic toward community members and toward family members. Those, to me, are the most essential things. We can't change what's happening to the environment without changing what society is doing to each other. And we will not be able to do that in our generation, probably. It's your generation and the generation that comes after you that must recreate an ethic that has been lost in thousands of years of Western civilization.
Bueno, yo quiero terminar diciendo de que es necesario de que no solamente sea la protesta, pero también tiene que estar acompañado por una propuesta de cambio, una propuesta obviamente de cambio desde el interior y que esté en perspectiva de cambiar también la sociedad en general. Yo creo que eso es absolutamente necesario. Y creo que los pueblos indígenas hemos dado muestra de que somos propositivos, estamos haciendo propuestas, no son solamente luchas de oposición, no son solamente luchas que van en dirección de decir no, pero decir también cuál es desde nuestra perspectiva la propuesta. La lucha, por ejemplo, contra el control de los recursos naturales tiene que ir en dirección de que esos recursos tienen que estar manejados por el pueblo. En el caso nuestro, por ejemplo, en el caso del Ecuador, terminamos un proyecto que se llama de biodiversidad y que eso tiene que ser reconocido por el Congreso y por el gobierno. Y esa lucha, al menos, creemos de que este momento es un reto para nosotros, porque si no, tenemos por delante Yo digo, realmente, quizá la extinción de los pueblos, porque lo fundamental es proteger, defender la madre naturaleza y sus recursos para poder vivir y para que los otros seres puedan seguir viviendo o conviviendo con nosotros.
In conclusion, I'd like to say that I think it's necessary not just to protest, but also to propose change, inner change, and social change. This is absolutely necessary. And Indigenous peoples have given many examples of our power to propose and not just to struggle and to oppose, but we don't just say no, we also propose. We struggle, the struggle isn't just against resisting the control by foreigners of our natural resources. We also propose by managing sustainably the natural resources of our people. So in Ecuador, I can cite a recent example of indigenous people's capacity to propose. We just drew up a project on conserving biodiversity in our territories, which we are sending to the Congress and the government for adoption. And it's a huge challenge to get them to adopt this project on biodiversity conservation. But if we don't, what we're looking at is the extinction of ourselves as peoples, because fundamental to our existence as peoples is the defense of Mother Earth and the natural resources, not just for our own livelihood, not just for our own survival, but for the survival of all beings on Earth.
I have only 2 points for this last question, and it is a real important one. The first thing is, do what you can to acquire the skills that you will need to represent and defend your people in these modern times. We need help everywhere. We need doctors, we need attorneys, we need indigenous leaders that will go to the United Nations, but we also need youth that are going to perpetuate our culture, learn our language, keep the basic traditions of our peoples alive. And the second and most important thing is learn the prayers of your people in your traditional language. Learn the sacred ceremonies of your people, because this work will test you in ways that you cannot conceive of. Your life will be threatened, your families also. There's not a single one of us who hasn't lost several friends fighting for the draft declaration. Indigenous peoples all over the world died for that document. And you will be tested in this way, but the prayers of your people in the language of your grandmothers will steel you for this fight, and there is no temptation that will take from us what we are when we pray to the Creator. That is our great strength.